Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The McNeil and Parkins Show.
670 The Score in Chicago. Shout out to you guys, McNeil and Parkins. Love you guys.
Afternoons on The Score.
Actor, Second City alum, and Chicago native Bob Odenkirk.
To hell with both of you. Kevin is lazy, folks. He doesn't want to do anything. Now, we all know that idle hands are the devil's playground. And Kevin is a shining example of the beautiful sin of sloth.
And a slothful child shall lead them.
There's Bobby C with the scripture, isn't he?
Gil Thielander at the golf club. He used to be a porno actor like 15 years ago.
No, I don't want to go to a porn party.
It's not a porn party.
So I'm doing this scene. It's supposed to be two girls. I'm going down. And this guy goes, I'll take care of it. He runs over to the craft service table. He comes back. His finger is red.
Right?
Tabasco sauce!
Because of Breaking Bad, I got this job as an actor on Breaking Bad. Do you know that show?
I do, and I haven't seen you in it yet. When were you in it?
First things first, you're going to put a dollar in my pocket, both of you. You want attorney-client privilege, don't you? So that everything you say is strictly between us. Okay, you're now both officially represented by Saul Goodman and Associates. Your secrets are safe with me under threat of disbarment.
Saul Goodman sent me.
I'll tell you about a young guy. He lived a long way from here, in a town called Cicero, Illinois. And in Cicero, he was the man.
Hi, where are you from?
I'm from Wilmette.
I'm from Cicero. Isn't it cool to be downtown?
Hey, are you those two guys who have that TV show in Aurora?
Wayne's World.
Party time.
No.
Hello there, Bob.
It's showtime, folks. The McNeil and Parkins Show. Afternoons on The Score.
And that doesn't even begin to sum up the incredible life in comedy and show business of our next guest. Well done, Chris Tannehill. We are very excited to welcome to the McNeil and Parkins Show. We've been trying to get different people to tell stories and just keep our minds off the crazy things going on in the world, and no one better. Born in Berwyn, went to Naperville High School, a Saluki from Southern Illinois, a Cub fan, Mr. Show, Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, and a whole bunch of other things maybe we'll get some stories on. Chicagoan Bob Odenkirk with us on The Score. Bob, thank you so much for the time. How you doing today?
I'm great. It's great talking to you. It's great to hear that clip package. It sounds like I've done a lot of stuff. I'm always surprised to hear it. I'm like, when did I do all that stuff?
Time flies a little bit.
It does. It does. And I'm so preoccupied being a dad, and my kids are in college now. My son goes to DePaul. He's loving Chicago, doing comedy. Well, not right now, but, you know, when we're all back in the swing of things, he's writing and performing all over town. And my nephews are there, too. And, and my daughter's going to college at Pratt in Brooklyn. So, I don't know. That's who I am. Me, and then I hear a clip package like that and think, Remember, you were on TV. But listen, how are you guys doing? Everything okay? How's that baby?
Oh, my baby is great. Thank you. Thank you for asking. Yeah, that's, it's not a terrible time to have an infant at home, because I imagine you wouldn't be going out too much in normal circumstances. So, you know, I get to be present for all of the midnight feedings and everything that goes along with that. So he's doing very well and, you know, adjusting to fatherhood.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, it's all over now. This is even when we all get to go back to normal life, you got to stay inside.
Yeah, he has no idea. Bob, he has no idea how much his life is going to remain changed even after this nonsense is over.
Yeah. You stay in quarantine for like 6 years.
6 years?
The rest of us will get to... Well, you know, I don't know about 6 years, but look, baby starts sleeping through the night around three, you know, in a few months. I don't know. You got like at least 3 years of this. And you at least have an excuse to watch sports, because you have to for your job. Whereas a lot of dads, it's like that's the first thing that goes is you got to stop going to the golf course. You got to stop spending that many hours doing anything but helping.
Yeah, my wife sometimes catches on with the she's like, that's not a Chicago sport. That's not essential for your show. You're just trying to get away from it. So I think she's picking up on my hustle a little bit. She's on to me.
I wish I had that excuse, man. It's my job.
Well, what were you forced to give up, Bob, when you entered into fatherhood? What were you forced to say, oh, man, I can't do that anymore?
Guys, my wife hates sports so much. Mm-hmm. So much. She said, when we got married, she said, if you have sports on in a room, I won't go into it. If you have it on the TV, I won't go in that room.
Wow.
But she's lightened up. She's lightened up over the years. But, yeah, she really despises it, but it's all good. I watch. What did I give up? I was playing golf. My son was about, he was a few months old, three, four months old, and I was out with Steve Rudnick, a great Chicago comic, whose career is really cool. He used to perform at Zany's with his partner, Leo Benvenuti, and all around town, and then they went off and wrote The Santa Claus. And Space Jam. Anyway, I was playing golf with Steve after my first son was born. And I realized I couldn't do this. I couldn't spend this time on the golf course. And I had a really old set of clubs, Lynx Predators. I loved them. Mm-hmm. And I just figured this is over for me, at least for a few years. I have to write a lot and I have to help. And so after every hole, I threw one club into the trees. And then at Father's Day last year, I started getting clubs back. My wife bought me a driver. So I'm going to get back into it. But, baseball, I basically chose baseball as the sport I would watch, you know, really closely and watch every game that I could. And it's great because when you're on set shooting a show, a drama like Better Call Saul or some of the movies I've done the last few years, there's a lot of downtime, but you can't really get lost in another movie or another story. But, you know, you got that MLB app and you just pop it up on your phone and you can watch a game and it's the best thing ever. And they're always playing for the whole summer, and that's usually when we were shooting Saul. And I've just really loved watching the Cubs the last couple of years and getting to see every game. This is tough for everybody. And gosh, wouldn't it be great if we had sports to keep us going right now? Boy, that'd be the best thing. We don't have that either. But anyway, carry on. Hopefully it'll come back soon. Yeah.
We're all certainly hoping for it. We're talking to Bob Odenkirk, Better Call Saul going right now. You can watch it. It's the best show on TV. What were your first
episode? I just want to tell you. Yeah.
Yeah, no, go ahead. What's about tonight's episode?
I want to tell you, I can't do any spoiler alerts, but if you haven't watched Better Call Saul and you're listening, you should still watch tonight's episode because we almost died shooting tonight's episode of this show. It was brutal, and I can't give away what happened, but if you watch it, you'll know. And just know that everything you're seeing, well, I'll just put it this way. None of the bullets are real. Everything else is real.
Mm-hmm. No stuntmen?
We had stuntmen, but it was a brutal shoot. The hardest shoot I've ever done, and that includes Mr. Show, when we used to have to spend all day outside in costumes and stuff in the heat and had no trailers to relax in. But look, tonight's Better Call Saul episode is really something special. I want everyone to know about it. And I just got off the phone with my friend John Banks, great character actor who plays Mike on the show. Mm-hmm. And we were commiserating about this. And he was, he's got to get out of the house, my friend, John Banks. But I think everyone's feeling that way right now. So sorry to cut you off, but I want everyone to check out this episode tonight. And not just fans of the show, you'll see it's a great adventure. And it was directed by Vince Gilligan, who wrote and created Breaking Bad. So it's one of the best things we've ever done on this show.
That is incredibly high praise for a show like Breaking Bad that is, you know, for many people, a Mount Rushmore show. And I would say with Better Call Saul as a diehard fan, there is really no drop-off. And I wonder the pressures of following Breaking Bad into creating your own universe. Like, can you even articulate what the pressures were of trying to hold up that standard of what was the original classic?
Yeah, I think, you know, the weight for that was really on Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould's shoulders. Vince created Breaking Bad, as I said, and Peter was one of the writers there. And then when they went to create this new show, I know they felt the weight of trying to live up to the impossible standards of that really amazing and magical show. I sort of didn't feel it until we were done shooting and the billboards were going up. And only when the billboards for Better Call Saul season one were going up did I realize, like, oh my God, everyone's going to watch this. I could be in real trouble. If this doesn't work, everybody in the whole world is going to at least sample it. And if it doesn't kind of work or work well enough, they're going to hate me forever. But, you know, listen, our business, you know, this is a business for you to take chances in. You really got to be willing to take chances, I think. And my sense of myself, and it comes from growing up in Chicago, and I don't know if it was going to get, I didn't feel that worried that I would be devastated by anything. Just, you know, I'd already done Mr. Show, which is really, that's me. That's my brain on screen. You know, that's how I feel about life, you know? And so I'd already gotten a chance to do that and share that with audiences and people. And that's a great thing to get out there, is to get yourself out there like that in a pure way. And after that, you know, I'm willing to try stuff. I'm willing to fail. I've failed before and I survived. I kept going. I didn't quit and I had to do it again. So it was a little scary there when the show premiered, but then I saw what a wonderful job that these writers and producers had done in creating something a little unique and different than Breaking Bad, and I think gripping and special in its own way.
Bob, you were, what, mid-20s when you get your first chance to write for Saturday Night Live. And, man, it was great to hear you at the beginning when you had that pinch me. I was actually in all these things. Tell us about what it was like as a young guy finding your way and getting a break through your friend Robert Smigel, who helped you enormously, and the rest is history. But that time in the late 80s, tell us what that was like.
Yeah, it was astounding. It's like winning the lottery a little bit. I mean, you work toward it. I'd been writing sketches for years, and I'd been at the Players Workshop up, which is defunct now. It was a school up there on Lincoln Avenue, just past Sheffield, by the VU, which I think the VU is still going, that bar. And we all used to go to the VU all the time. Dave Jamillo runs that place in the Green Mill, or he used to. Anyway, and just to be living in that world in Chicago, and I wrote a lot of comedy there and did my own live shows and made a lot of friends. And Smigel had gotten hired at SNL 2 years earlier before I got hired, but I'd continued to write with him even when he was there. So I was waiting tables at Ed DeBevick's, and I would glance over at the TV on a Saturday night, and they'd be doing a joke I wrote or a sketch that I wrote. I'd see that up on the TV while I was bringing people food at Ed DeBevick's, which was always that was such a strange feeling, because you're like, you really want to tell somebody. You want to tell the person who you're handing a burger to, see that? I wrote that. But they wouldn't believe you, and they'd think you're out of your mind, and it wouldn't mean anything to them anyways. But it was a strange... a bit strange to do that, to kind of live that double life a little bit, because I was contributing to the show through my friend Robert and still working a job in Chicago. And I remember one time I went to SNL and wrote and worked all through the night, went to the party after the show at SNL. I think it was a Matthew Modine show. No, it was before that. Anyway, I got on a plane after the SNL party, flew to Chicago, went to Ed DeBevick's, and did the morning shift at the restaurant. I didn't even sleep. So crazy. But look, when I got hired there, it was very intimidating, and that show is very intimidating. A lot of people who get hired there are mostly young people, and it's their first job, and it's such a big, legendary show. And you want to do well, and it can really be a challenge to try to be funny when you're scared out of your wits.
But it's just an amazing idea of you still being a waiter while you're writing and being a part of something that iconic. And, you know, the best of SNL is the things that live generations and generations later. And you created Matt Foley for Chris Farley, but not necessarily at SNL. How did that all come about for you to be the creative inspiration behind that iconic bit?
You know, I was at SNL. I'd been there for 3 years, and my good friend Tom Giannis was going to direct the Second City summer show, and he asked me to be in the main stage. And I had not done the programs at Second City. I'd been on my own, off in a corner writing and making my way in show business, and obviously I'd done pretty well with that. But to be invited to perform on the stage at Second City or to write a show there, it's like being asked to pitch for the Cubs or do anything for the Cubs. You know, you're going to say yes. You know, you got to say yes, even though you think, well, I might just stink the place up, you know, but still, I get to wear the uniform for a few weeks, I'll do it. And, so I said yes to that, and while I was writing at Saturday Night Live, I was flying to Chicago after every read-through at SNL, and a Wednesday read-through, I'd fly to Chicago after and do the improv set at Second City on Wednesday night and Thursday night, and then I would write on Friday, and then I would fly back to New York. Lauren didn't know I was doing this. He did not know I was doing another job. And everyone at SNL covered for me because they knew this meant a lot to me. And I did this for half a season at SNL. And then one night we were doing the improvs, and Chris was so great to me, and I loved him so much, just like everybody who ever met him. And we did a improv. I forget what it was, but it was like teachers that were giving an anti-drug lecture to high school students, and he did a coach who was basically Matt Foley, a version of the character. And I went home that night and took out my legal pad, and I just wrote that sketch. And I've written thousands of sketches, and most of them needed a lot of rewriting to get good. That one came out, that was one of maybe three in my life that were good, that came out exactly how they're done, exactly the way they're written. And very lucky to do it. And just saw this guy, you know, I grew up in Naperville, and there were these people who lived down by the DuPage River when I was a kid. And there's a bunch of hippies. We used to go to the Burger King there and see these people who were like hanging out under the bridge. And I just had this image of this motivational speaker, which is kind of a new thing at the time in culture, mm-hmm. who's using himself as a negative example of what you don't want to do. And that alone seemed like a good construction for a character. And then I married it up a little bit with Chris, but Chris took it to, you know, a whole nother level. But all that stuff, Van Down by the River and the construction of it was something that just came out just the way it's done. And I just, you know, it was the greatest, comedy-wise, it was the greatest thing I've ever been a part of. And I love Mr. Show, and there's great things in Mr. Show. But that was the purest, strongest, funniest. I've never seen a piece that an audience of people, now Chris wasn't famous, right? He was one of the cast at Second City. He was not a famous guy. No one knew him. When they bought a ticket to Second City, they don't know who they're going to see. The cast is not famous. And they would come in, they would enjoy the show, and when that scene hit, every single night, tore the roof off. Everyone, tears in their eyes, laughing. And it was the most amazing thing, the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And it just, it was a perfect marriage of this comic structure that you could understand and enjoy and that built within itself, and Chris's performance, which was always great.
Was Chris your favorite performer to write for then?
You know, you can't do much better. I mean, David Cross is a really funny performer. I don't know, people probably know him more from Arrested Development, but we did a show called Mr. Show on HBO, and David's really funny kind of all the time. Tom Kenny kills me too. Tom Kenny does the voice of SpongeBob. There's a lot of performers who I love. But Chris, you know, Chris is in the top three. Jack Black is right up there. The top three, you know, so, but Chris is right up there, you know, and there's, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Chris. He didn't get to live very long, and he didn't get to do much, frankly. And the reason there's a lot of talk about him is because he left behind a big, hole, in everybody's heart and in their dreams of what they would see him do and get to enjoy. Because if you knew him, you worked with him, and I think even if you were a fan who paid any close attention, you had a sense of how great, what a gift he was to all of us and what he could have done. I mean, he could have done drama. He could have won Oscars, this guy. He was so lovable immediately, and he was so able to share his soul as a performer. That's a really special person.
You mentioned Mr. Show, and you know, whenever I need a laugh, I always punch in on YouTube the story of Everest. I think it's one of the great comedy sketches of all time,
yeah.
Where Jay Johnston, he falls repeatedly. He plays a man who scales Mount Everest, comes back home to tell the tale,
yeah.
And he just falls over and over again into two shelves of thimbles in the background. He fell five or six times, yeah. I think, and you know, take me back to that day, what you remember about it. I know it was a long time ago. You're talking over 20 years ago, but how many takes did that actually take? Like, did you have to, were there some that got messed up because someone was like, you know, off their mark,
yeah.
Or messed up a line? How many times did he fall is what I want to know, Bob.
He fell one more time than you see in the sketch, we actually knew we wanted to have, it's a, if you're listening, it's called The Story of Everest. If everybody who hears this watches it, one out of 10 people will hate it. The other two will like it. And the other seven will think it's the best sketch they've ever seen in their lives. And that's me. I agree. It's the funniest thing ever. Jay Johnson is so funny. We knew we wanted to have him fall into the thimbles. We wanted to just keep doing it until the audience stopped laughing at it. And we got there. We did it one more time than we, and you see in the piece, as it appears, we cut one of the falls out because no one laughed. They laughed. Everything else you see is a live laugh. It's real. It's not sweetened. It's the real laughing from a real live audience. But we just went one too many on purpose just to see how far we could go. And they just sat there like, you're not going to do this forever, are you? And anyway, it's a great sketch, and I'm glad you like it.
Oh, I love it, actually. Is there any progress?
Jay, I'll just point out that Jay lived in Wrigleyville, and the story that we built that sketch out of took place in the house that he lived in a few blocks from Wrigley Field, where his mother was a bit of a hoarder, and she had a Coleman grill in the kitchen with the ashes in it, you know, from the summer. They had pulled it in to the kitchen. It was just taking up a corner, and his uncle came in to tell a story and leaned on it and knocked it over, knocking ashes all over the kitchen. And then they all cleaned up the ashes. And then once they were done, someone walked in and said, what happened in here? What were you guys doing? And the uncle said, oh, I was telling a story, and I leaned on the Coleman grill. And when he said that, he did it a second time and knocked it over and got ashes all over the whole kitchen a second time.
Outstanding. I read a couple years ago. I read a couple years ago that you guys were thinking about maybe doing installment three of With Bob and David. Where is that at? Is that still something that you guys are considering doing?
No, I mean, we did that. We did a couple episodes for Netflix and had a great time. It's called With Bob and David on Netflix because we couldn't use the Mr. Show name. But if you go to With Bob and David on Netflix, you'll see all of us much older, but doing the same silly comedy. We had a great time doing it. But, you know, David lives in New York. We still work. We still talk about, you know, writing and working together, and we love each other. And he's also got a baby. He's got a – well, she's three now, but he's kind of preoccupied with that kid, which is great because she's awesome. And so we'll work together again, I hope. I don't know when. But in the meantime, I'm like everybody else. I'm at home. I'm glad my kids are here. We're all safe. My son already had this thing. He came home from DePaul. His roommate had been sick for a week, and he immediately was sick, and he got tested, and he had the virus. He's over it now for about 5 days, completely over it, feels great. No one else got it that we can tell, which is amazing. But we did everything you're supposed to do. We made sure he wore a mask, and we wiped everything down, and he washed his hands like crazy, and no one else got it that we know. And so we're all just hunkered down and waiting to see. Really, I want to see when I can get tested to see if I already had it, because I suspect that I might have, and that my daughter also might have already had it. My wife, she got tested because she was feeling a little under the weather, and she did not have it. So,
well, I'm glad that your son is okay. It's obviously dominating everyone's thoughts right now. It's the only thing going on. And I'd imagine you're hearing from a lot of people with Better Call Saul as being one of the highlights of their quarantine time, right? It's a distraction for a lot of us now in this crazy world.
Yeah, I mean, silver lining, I guess, in the darkest of clouds. But that show is worthy of your focus and time, and it rewards the audience with a lot of really well-written scenes and really entertaining storytelling. And so tonight, again, is going to be the best, one of the best we've done, and really worth watching even just as a standalone. But, you know, I'll say, beyond the fact that I'm glad we have this show for people and that it's something to distract them, it's exciting that it's once a week. I know that we're used to streaming shows, but this is going to take a couple of weeks, what we're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And to give people something to, you know, pace that out and look forward to next week, and we have three more episodes to go, and I'm kind of hoping that when this is done in say 3 weeks, we might be hearing about, you know, how this is all going to loosen up.
Oh, that'd be great. Hey, Bob, writing is such a unique form of art. How do you write comedy when you're in a foul mood? I assume you've had those from time to time. How do you work when you're not feeling it?
Yeah, well, luckily I don't have a show on right now that I have to write. You know, weirdly, being angry or upset can help you write comedy, because a lot of times you write comedy about stuff that makes you mad that you want to sort of make fun of. Mm-hmm. The worst is to feel kind of, scared is a thing that makes it hard to write comedy. I think people have struggled with comedy in this. I wrote a little piece for my son's online magazine the other day called a message of solidarity from my indoor yacht. And it's just a celebrity, you know, saying, hey, I know what you're going through, but he's inside his indoor yacht. And I think that you could still find. So I think the hardest part is writing comedy when there's real sadness around you, or the potential for sadness. And more than that, even maybe uncertainty, which I think a lot of people have felt. And it's understandable. We don't really know where this is going. That makes it harder than anger. And I don't know, you know, I mean, I guess maybe sometimes you just got to take a break and wait for your, wait till you feel funny again. Geez, I don't think there's anything wrong with hesitating a little bit and on the comedy ideas and taking a vacation from it. But it's tough. I mean, basically all I'm saying is you're right, and it's tough. And I think we're in one of those tough moments right now.
Bob, last thing, and you've been very generous with your time. Thank you very much. You could hear it at different times in your answers, the impact that your upbringing in Chicago meant to you, whether you're talking about the Cubs or Second City. And I was reading that Steve Dahl was one of your early influences. And I know you've done stuff with the history of Disco Demolition. He was just on our show last week telling stories.
Yeah, how's he doing?
Good.
He was doing great, talking about his podcast and, you know, enjoying being off terrestrial radio, I think, in many ways. But I'm just curious, like, can you put into words like what Chicago meant to you personally and professionally in terms of its impact and being formative in your comedy?
Yeah, I can. I always wondered why so many funny people came from Chicago. It's a lot. It's a high percentage. Well, I think it's you kind of grow up in Chicago with a feeling of critical point of view on life, and you don't get full of yourself too easily in Chicago. I think you know, New York breeds these loudmouth people who really think highly of themselves, and of course, L.A. you can't be enough of a star of your own life here. You know, everyone thinks they're important and so cool, but in Chicago, you kind of grow up feeling like you got a mountain to climb and you got to fight to get somewhere. And I think it makes you funnier. I think it makes you see life with a more of a critical eye. And also, you kind of have to laugh about it. I mean, life is kind of hard, you know, when you feel like you're coming out of First of all, the weather's tough.
Yeah.
That makes you funny because you got to deal with that every day. What can you do but make jokes about it and laugh about it? But I don't know. It just comes from that mentality, the Chicago mentality. And I like it. You know, and when I was in school, I used to sit in the back of the class as much as I could. And I was a good student. I got A's and mostly B's, but I got some A's and I read a lot. But I like to sit in the back of the class and watch things and make fun of things and make jokes. And I think that's Chicago is sitting in the back and watching the buffoons who run this place and making fun of them. And I like coming from that place. I'm glad I'm from there. I feel like I'm still from there, even though I'm living here.
Bob, that's awesome. And our audience, the response on social media and our text line has been fantastic. We will all get through this. There will be Cubs games at Wrigley Field again. And we'd love to have you on anytime you want to tell some Chicago stories or you're coming to a Cubs game. Thank you very much for your time. And we'll all be watching Better Call Saul tonight. It sounds like it's going to be one hell of an episode.
Great. Thanks. Take care, everyone.
Thanks, Bob. Take care.
The great Bob Odenkirk with us on the McNeil and Parkin Show.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.